My sister's minister is named Molly, and she writes about the deep time. And she calls on us to face these days by cultivating the deep time. Molly advises that we draw on the past, mining its lessons and keeping dear ones and heroic ones close. When we summon our imagination, courage, and stamina, when we vision the new world, we create it. Today's text, selected for Racial Justice Sunday, draw on past events in order to inform current events, provisions from history for the living of these days. Imagination, I think, is the engine that propels liberation from chains of deprivation, suffering, and oppression. Times when the good and the true have been corrupted, we have to depend on beauty. Times when people are trampled by the powerful, then creativity is the escape route. Have you heard about the Renaissance in Detroit? I have a niece who lives there. There are brave and imaginative artists who have colonized abandoned industrial buildings. And there are settlers, new settlers, who have filled the empty houses and live in gardens of their own making. Have you heard about Frontezira? Folks who inhabit the Arizona-Mexican borderline and perform political and spiritual theater at the wall. In Naco, Mexico, painters have taught teenagers how to be artists, and an ugly wall has been transformed into a beautiful canvas. A film historian and critic of film in the New York Times a couple weeks ago observed that this year we have so many beautiful movies, Moonlight was one, because of the impending threat. It is the impending threat that calls forth the souls of artists. Just to mention one threat, I wonder if you saw that our Arizona legislature is considering a bill that will penalize any charitable agency, churches included, $1,000 a day for each refugee that we relocate here by U.S. government programs. Revelation, the final book of our Christian Bible, serves the purpose to which Molly calls the church. Visions in Revelation are written to sustain congregations that are being brutalized by the Roman government. Edicts are forcing citizens to declare that Caesar has all power, all knowledge, is God, the only one who can fix things. First order loyalty is demanded to the nation. Christians who resisted in those days were systematically refused, abused, misused, stripped of property, personal freedoms, and life itself. It was a death penalty government. To this historical setting, the visionary speaks. John, the author, provides auditory and visual images of a wonderful new world, a world that is discontinuous with present reality. John's vision is not of a gently unfolding scene or a natural occurrence. John's visions are a radical break from Rome. According to a minority of scholars, Revelation was originally written to be a production, meant to be performed as sacred opera. Consider the speeches, like arias. Consider the choral responses. Consider the dragon and the woman who is clothed in the sun and has the moon at her feet as enormous puppets parading through the gallery. Hear the seven angel trumpeters and hear the seven deafening thunderclaps. There's also costuming and stage directions. Descending is the Lamb on the throne. His only weapon is his tongue, which is a sword. Settings by the crystal river with a tree that bears 12 kinds of fruits. We have no records of productions then, 80-so years after the death of Jesus and after the resurrection of Christ, we have no recordings of that. But I have heard about modern productions that have been done. And I confess that I have really wanted to provoke a musical director into producing this sacred opera, perhaps instead of the Christmas pageant next year. What do you think? I haven't been successful so far at that one. Many of us were taught about the code language of African-American gospel music. Pharaoh and Egypt are the equivalent to the slave owner and the white oppression. Jews enslaved are the equivalent of African-American enslaved persons. Crossing the Red Sea is crossing the Jordan. The promised land is freedom. That saga of the genocidal times in Egypt is reconceived as the condition of American slavery and with imaginative visionaries, whether Moses or Harriet Tubman. Courage and persistence lead the escape. Miriam was the song leader, you know, and the women played timbrels on the shore when they got over. Again, the musicians are the prophets. Today is Racial Justice Sunday during African American History Month, February, the shortest month. In contrast to our local study of white privilege and white supremacy, which is taking at least 3 or 4 months, and I'm sure it'll roll out more than that. Today, our national circumstances cause us to wonder with consternation if the single-party hegemony brings threats to minority voting rights, bodily integrity, especially of detainees, reproductive rights established by the Supreme Court. Will the center hold? Will our judicial branch uphold the Bill of Rights threatened by the executive branch? In our present circumstances, we do well to heed Molly Basquette's wisdom. Turn to visionaries, engage with prophets who forecast a future that is not determined by the oppressions of today. I love our New Century hymnal because it provides so many more gospel songs than did our previous hymnals. And all these songs emerge from political struggle to throw off enslavement. And in addition, I'm sure some of you have noticed that our hymnal rewrites familiar hymns with challenging contemporary theology. New lyrics jar us, and they make us consider our not always so innocent collusion with a racist or sexist history. Only infrequently since Sunday morning is racially segregated, for the most part, only infrequently are we generally in the UCC in a circumstance where we call on the images from Revelation for a discontinuation of the current history. Our liberal construct of history tends to be remote from these images of cosmic struggle, final judgment, the rapture, And why do we need songs of being glory-bound on the highway to heaven if it's going relatively well for us? Some of us. I am one among the well-educated, relatively secure white people who, through circumstances not of my own making and not of my own deserving, lived an experience that immersed me in social chaos and extreme suffering and deprivation of certain citizens, poor and black, and abject government neglect and oppression of the most vulnerable. During Hurricane Katrina, I served with the Red Cross in Lafayette, Louisiana, and I just found a friend who also served there. I served at emergency rooms and at the Cajun Dome. I'd moved there because my husband had taken a job there. You probably remember those images of horror and destruction. Do you remember some of them? On Sundays, we worshiped at Tesh UCC in New Iberia. Being the closest UCC to us, that's where we went. It was a small wood frame white building, four square, on concrete block pillars, centered in a cluster of very modest homes. Tesh UCC is a proud historically black church of the Congregational branch. Pastor Paul and Miss Gloria are choir director and keyboardist. Brother Babineau, who leads prayer service before worship, a dynamic choir like ours. And you get your solo when you join. I can remember the white-dressed mothers of the church would sit in the front row, and sometimes, like, remember, Chris, when Ronnie joined, and Ronnie got his new solo, and one of the mothers said, "That used to be my solo. That used to be my solo." Every Sunday, a second offering was taken for benevolences, which is sort of like our Good Samaritan Fund, because the people knew they had to get ready. They expected crisis and disaster, so the benevolence fund was a necessity for somebody every week. When Katrina hit, benevolence was there. We sung gospel and nothing else. Every week we'd be ready. We prepared economically and spiritually as if the end were near. I was saved there. And when I say saved, I mean that I was made useful for the next week of work at the Cajun Dome. I was saved there every week. And every week I sang along with the closing words, kind of like our sanctuary song. Get right, church, and let's go home. Get right, church, and let's go home. Get right, church, oh, get right, church. Get right, church, and let's go home. Miss Gloria would start playing it if the pastor was going on too long. The gospel music kept us all going through the trials and tribulations of Katrina. I am prepared by the gospel preached and sung at Tesh UCC for most any disaster that arrives. I am convinced and convicted by the visionary gospel of hope, courage, and persistence that is a gift to the church from the living of those days. I could tell you so many stories about those days, but we here are on white people time for church. What I bring on Racial Justice Sunday to promote the keep on keeping on, to resist regimes like Pharaoh's and Caesar's, is our reliable compendium of African American gospel music, which imagines the time when God's justice blots out human cruelty. In these days, may we deepen our collective souls with images of cosmic disruptions of any evil that threatens. May we sing a gospel that promotes defiance of any violence or suffering or hatred or fear. Together, when we sing unsentimentally, to inculcate peace in our souls, joy in our souls, hope in our souls, and love in our souls. May it be so. Church, be imaginative, be courageous, be persistent, dear ones and heroic ones. Get ready. Amen.